Welcome to the fifth episode of the Curly W Live podcast. As a reminder, you can always find the podcast on our blog, Curly W Live, which is curlyw.mlblogs.com, nationals.com/podcast, and on iTunes, search Curly W Live. So as we record this, the Nationals are in the midst of a nine-game road trip that began with a big four-game sweep over the Cincinnati Reds in their first series following the All-Star break. The road trip will take the Nationals from Cincinnati to Anaheim, where they'll have a two-game midweek series against the Angels before heading to Arizona for a weekend series with the Diamondbacks. Following this road trip, the Nationals will return back to D.C. for a homestand beginning next Tuesday, July 25th, against the first-place Milwaukee Brewers and the Colorado Rockies. That series against the Rockies will mark the return of former National Ian Desmond. So episode 5 of the Curly W Live podcast features interviews with Rob McDonald, the VP of Clubhouse Operations and Team Travel for the Nationals, and Eddie Longos, the Director of Scouting Operations. We talk with both guys about their careers in baseball, their day-to-day duties, and some of the aspects of their jobs that you may not necessarily know or think about. All in all, I think these are two very interesting conversations that I hope you enjoy. So here you go. Here is episode 5 of the Curly W Live podcast. Our first interview is with Rob McDonald. As we talk about in this interview, Rob has been with the team since Montreal, and his career in baseball started even before that. We were able to talk to Rob on, frankly, a perfect day for an interview like this because it was the day the Nationals acquired Ryan Madsen and Sean Doolittle. Rob gave us a great glimpse into how that acquisition impacted his day, how he approached it, how he interacted with those two players once he finally got in touch with them. We also talk about his history, his career path, what it's like running a clubhouse, what it's like running team travel for a Major League Baseball team. So this interview is a great glimpse into Rob's career, his history in baseball, and what it's like to have the role that he has. So here is our interview with Rob. All right, we are coming to you live from the Curly W Studios, which today reside in Cincinnati, Ohio. We're here on Sunday night recording after the Nationals' 14-4 win over the Cincinnati Reds this afternoon. In addition to the win, there's a lot of big news today, so we'll get into that with Rob as well. But we're here with Rob McDonald, the Vice President of Clubhouse Operations and Team Travel for the Nationals. Among Rob's many accomplishments in his career, he has not one but two Traveling Secretary of the Year awards to his name from 2003 and 2015. And you can find more on these awards in Rob's very extensive media guide bio found on page 62 of the 2017 Washington Nationals media guide. Rob, thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you for that intro.
Again, like I said, today is a great day to talk to you. As we said, we're in Cincinnati following Washington's win today, and there's some big news today that impacted your job, and I kind of want to talk to you a little bit about that and how that all impacted your day and how it's kind of like a day in the life of a traveling secretary. But first, let's start with your career path. You're in your 16th season with the organizations, and after starting with the Expos in 2002, right?
Yes, correct.
So can you walk us through your career path, how you got to that point, and how you've gone since then?
Well, it's kind of an odd start. After college at the University of Arizona, I was helping run adult and youth leagues in Tucson. And I'd interviewed with the Arizona Cardinals football team and talked some other sports contacts, but nothing really panned out. And then one of the gentlemen who was in the adult basketball league was Mike Fader. At the time, Mike was the general manager of the Tucson Toros AAA team of the Diamondbacks during their inaugural season. And I kind of looked for some advice from him, bounced some ideas off of him. And I asked him, you know, if you hear of anything, please let me know. Let me know if you hear of any jobs in any capacity. So ironically, about 2 weeks later, he called and said, hey, we have a job as a kind of a coach's intern or a coach's assistant during spring training that year. Would I be interested? I really hadn't played baseball since high school other than some organized softball games, but I jumped at the opportunity. I worked with the Diamondbacks coaching staff that first spring training, kind of working with Carlos Toscas, their bench coach, setting up fields, throwing BP, doing various jobs for them during that first inaugural spring training. Then kind of piggybacked that into an internship in their marketing department during the regular season, and then just kind of worked odd jobs. I worked with the Nike at their outlet. I worked at a radio station, is like doing a lot of their appearances or their outer market events. At the end of the season, I was looking for another job. A boss of mine with the Diamondbacks told me about the Arizona Fall League. So I worked the Arizona Fall League after that as the general manager of the Sun City Solar Sox. Which was a great experience. I met a lot of people doing that. A lot of future Nationals were on that team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had Marlon Anderson was on the team.
Okay.
Micah Bowie, who was an Expo, George Lombard, DeRosa was also on that team.
Mark DeRosa?
Yeah, Mark DeRosa was on that team. So we had a pretty good squad that year. But from there, I was kind of out in limbo for a little while. I didn't really have a job lined up after the fall league. And I gave myself an ultimatum. I was either going to find a job by the first of the year or I was going to join the Marines, one of the two. Luckily, a job opened up with the Arizona from the Arizona Diamondbacks. I heard of a job with the Marlins. It's kind of one of those small world type situations where the manager of my Solar Sox team was Freddie Gonzalez, who was the AAA manager. And Carlos Toscas had worked also with the Marlins. So they basically put a good word in with me with Dan Lunetta. I interviewed for an assistant position in the player development scouting department and got the position that January.
So do you remember when you started in that role, do you remember any advice someone gave you, whether it was Freddie or Carlos Toscas or anybody in baseball that, you know, it was your first job, do this or remember to do this or you'll be successful if you do this?
One thing that they always taught me was try to treat every day like it's your first day of the internship. Approach the job with some great enthusiasm, a great zest for trying to learn as much as possible, and just try to keep your head down and keep working, try to stay as positive as possible and take every situation, either learn what you would do different or learn from the situation.
Okay. So now in your second year, 2003, you guys played 23 games in Puerto Rico, right?
Yes.
So for a young person in your position, pretty new to baseball, new to the career, what was that whole process like and that experience like for you?
It was extremely hectic at that point in time. We didn't really have a lot of guidance. We were a very small organization there with the Expos at that point in time. There was not a lot of support just in bodies and people. Mm-hmm. But it was great because we all kind of hung together. It was good because everyone kind of understood that this was a learning experience.
Right.
Guys kind of knew that, hey, this is all new to me, new to you. Let's see what works, what doesn't. And we kind of worked real well as a team at that point in time.
And then fast forward a few years, the news breaks that the Expos are becoming the Washington Nationals and moving to D.C. What do you remember about that time of your career and your life? What was that move like? Do you remember how you got the news? What the physical move itself was like? Do you remember, what you thought of D.C. at the time? What were your experiences were back then?
It was a very odd time. We had heard the rumors that we were going to be moving to D.C. and we were in Montreal during that last season. But literally, the news didn't break until the last game of that season.
Right.
It was a very surreal type event. We come down after the game. The commissioner's there. some other people are there at the event. We just witnessed grown men crying, and people were very upset because it was the last game in Expos history at that point in time. And they announced that the team was moving to D.C. It was very odd because a lot of those people I'd grown very fond of that I worked with. Some of those people had worked their entire lives, professional lives, for the Expos. They were very shook up at the time, and then you'd go down to the clubhouse, and for the most part, the staff and the players were extremely excited. So it was very surreal. It was an exciting time for pretty much everyone involved. We really know what we're getting into coming to D.C. It's a brand new market, a new area. Didn't really have any network of people at that point in time. But once again, we're small staff. We kind of leaned on each other to get things done and keep moving forward.
And then from a bigger perspective, bigger picture, how was your role as traveling secretary or the traveling secretary role throughout baseball? How would you say it's changed from when you started in 2002, 2003 to where we are now in 2017?
Just the information is available to the guys. Mm-hmm. It's still the same job. At the end of the day, you're chartering planes, booking hotel rooms, getting guys to and from the park, helping facilitate player moves. But the technology that's there, the ability to send out text messages to the players, the ability to look up information, to get information at your fingertips, has made things a lot easier to do. Before, we used to have to, call a travel agent or call and get someone on the horn.
Right.
Now you can send a text, you can go back and forth, you can gather information, distribute information rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to your role in team travel, you're also VP of clubhouse operations, so you kind of run the show down in the home clubhouse for the team. And with that comes managing a staff of clubhouse attendants, travel assistants, bat boys, generally younger staff. But what do you try to get across to them, especially the younger members of your staff, especially about whether or not this might be their first job in baseball or how to pursue a career in baseball or, what it takes to be successful for the team and for themselves?
It's interesting because doing the travel for all those years, it was probably the hardest transition I've had.
Mm-hmm.
It's because really you depended on yourself.
Right.
You depended on yourself to get things done. But moving with the staff and having to monitor or work with a lot of those guys, it's been challenging. It's been good because, you get to someone, like you said, influence their career path and ask them what direction they want to go. but it's tough to get everybody on the same page. Right. Everyone has their own interests, has their own desires, mm-hmm. and it's been very interesting to try to get that group to come together. Mm-hmm. It's a daily challenge, right. because we are a small group of guys that deal with the players on a day in and day out interaction.
Right.
We're able to somewhat we're the first person they see in the morning, mm-hmm. and sometimes the last person they see at night. And I try to express to my staff that we can set the tone of how their day is going to go. We need to, you know, again, be optimistic and positive when we approach those guys, win or loss, mm-hmm. and keep a professional attitude and try and keep a professional environment. It's tough to not get up and down with right. the losses and with the wins, but our job is to offer the consistent service and job that we can do by staying consistent and level-headed.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of along those same lines, but obviously we're here to win, and the team's goal is to win every single night. But from your perspective, when you leave Nats Park at night, or your staff leaves at Nats Park at night, like, what's a win to you guys? What's important? When you get in your car, you know, what would you consider a win for that evening? Other than the score on the scoreboard.
Yeah, it's very true, very true. I think for us, a win is when you don't have to hear about us. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, if you hear about us or we're in the middle of something, that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Our job is to stay kind of in the shadows, per se, under the radar, and make things happen smoothly and go smoothly. If a guy comes in, his day goes well, he's able to have a productive start, a mm-hmm. productive game, good at bats, all their equipment and stuff is there when they need it, then we've done a good job. Mm-hmm. If we're too much the center of the events going on yeah. that day, then it's been a bad day. I think the biggest thing for us is that, as a staff, is I try to express them too, that we expect to win every day.
Right.
We should never come to the ballpark and expect to lose or just compete. We should expect to win every mm-hmm. day. And our guys have been good. The staff I have now has been very good about taking right. that approach.
Now, you've been lucky enough over your years to work for some of the biggest managers in the game, from Frank Robinson, obviously, Davey, Dusty Baker, and then, you know, Matt Williams, Manny Acton, Jim Riggleman in between. What have you learned from those guys, or has any piece of advice or any experience with any of those guys kind of stuck out to you over your career?
It's a great question, because they're all very different. Mm-hmm. All those managers have plus points or things that are great in how they manage the game and how mm-hmm. they manage their staff and their employees. And then some guys have things you may not be too mm-hmm. fond of. But they've all been great to work for. Frank taught me to always be thorough in what I do mm-hmm. and to try and do things to the best of my abilities. Manny was a great influence on me, because he kind of taught me how to step back mm-hmm. and not take things so personally and do my job to the best I can that day, and that's all I can do. Mm-hmm. That I can't control the outcome or control how people feel about it. All I can control is the effort I give. Mm-hmm. Riggleman was great, because he was very thorough mm-hmm. in my book. He was always on top of his A's and B's and a straightforward guy with right. me. And Davey taught me how to really just talk to people. Mm-hmm. Davey was very good at making a lot of people feel at home in his office, and I always had a great conversation, a great rapport with him. Dusty's been great, because he's been somewhat of a mentor to me that I can bounce ideas or bounce questions and get his view baseball-wise. Like I said, I've been very fortunate. The guys I've worked with have never been very critical of me. They allow mm-hmm. me to do my job and mm-hmm. kind of trust my opinion, which is great. Right. They value what I offer them, and they give me straight answers. Right. I've had managers that I can as long as I come there with a question delicately, I right. can ask them why they do something during the game. Right. What was their thought process? It's been great for me, because I haven't had to read the paper to figure out what's going on with the game. For the most part, I'm able to go and ask a manager directly what he was thinking right. or what was the plan or why'd you make this move. Mm-hmm. And those guys respect me enough to give me a straight answer.
Okay. Now, my next topic was going to be pretty basic, about what's a normal game day like for you, or normal road game, normal home game. But with the news of today, I thought it'd be more important to kind of talk about what happened this morning. You know, we're coming in for a Sunday 1 o'clock game here, and the news broke shortly before the game that the Nationals acquired Sean Doolittle and Ryan Matson from the Oakland Athletics. So when we get that news, we each of us had different roles. I go into kind of my mode, and you have your mode. So when the time you find out that we acquired these players, like, what's next for you in terms of getting in touch with them, setting up arrangements? You know, what do you do?
Well, most of the time I hear from Mike Rizzo mm-hmm. or one of our assistant GMs that the trade or the transaction has been made. Mm-hmm. I kind of wait at that point for Mike Rizzo to welcome the player to mm-hmm. the organization. And once I heard that Mike has spoken to the player mm-hmm. or the players, and the players are aware, then I'll reach out to my counterpart a lot of times. Okay. Mickey Morabito, who's been with the Oakland Athletics for a long time, mm-hmm. He and I talked this morning. We trade player information, their mm-hmm. contact information. hey, is there anything special about this guy I need to know? Have you talked to him? Are they aware? Do they have a family? Just very basic questions to kind of give us a background on what we're going to be dealing with when we finally talk to the player. So then after that, I reached out to Sean first. I called Sean, welcome to the club. Told him kind of how our schedule is the next few days, that we're here in Cincinnati for the next 2 days. We have a day game tomorrow. We know travel is going to be tough. We'd like him to get out here, but let me look at what flights are available. But if that can't happen, then, you know, we're going to be in Anaheim the next 2 days and kind of let him know what's going to be going on for about the next week, 10 days of our season. I also reached out to
Ryan.
Ryan. I was going to say Madsen, but I reached out to Ryan, spoke to him, and did the same type of thing. Ask him, you know, are they going to be traveling with their family? Mm-hmm. They have kids, anything special they're going to need. From there, I get off the phone with them. I kind of call a travel agent. Look at the different options that are available. What time would they have to leave tonight? Are there flights out of Oakland? Are there flights out of San Francisco? Are they direct? Players that do first-class airfare per the CBA, so we've got to make sure we can offer them, if at all possible, first-class options. There was nothing really for those guys available tonight that it made sense. We could have got them out here first thing in the morning, but it didn't really make sense to rush these guys out here to get out here for one game and then get back on a plane and fly another 4 or 5 hours back out to the West Coast. We talked out the plan with both players. They're both going to meet us in Anaheim. One guy's flying, one guy's going to drive down, and then kind of talked out basic questions they may have. Simple as, what's the dress code on the road? To, when are you guys leaving to Phoenix? To, can you help me out with housing in D.C.? Very simple questions. How are the guys? What's going on? It's, at this point, everyone's very excited. It's a good conversation and a good thing to happen. Once we get a plan together, I'll reach back out to Mike Rizzo, give him a heads up, let him know what's going on, when to expect the players, and let Dusty and the pitching coach know when to expect the guys in town.
Now, like you said, you're generally either the second or third person that these guys talk to from the organization. Players aside, you know, when it's determined that they're going to come here, do you tell them anything about playing here or what they're about to experience coming to D.C., you know, about, you know, whether it's the culture or the stadium or the neighborhood? Do you kind of preface their experience in any way?
In that initial conversation, no. It's more so to let them know that, hey, we're excited to have you here. We're excited to have you be a National. We're ready to get you here and get you going as soon as possible. Sometimes I'll tell a guy, if I have a previous history with him and they know a player, I'll tell him, hey, we got a pretty special thing going here. We're excited to get you on board with the team and get you on the same page as us, because we're trying to do special things here during this season. Once we sit down together, a lot of times this will happen in Anaheim. You know, I'll tell them about D.C., tell them about the area, tell them about where a lot of guys live. We'll talk about shipping their cars out, where they need a car, stuff like that. But these guys are a little different. Some guys have agents that are very proactive, or may have other players on our team. They already have a feel or an idea where they want to go. But it really varies from guy to guy. Most of the time, it's really just introduction and let them know that we're here to make them put them in the best situation to be successful as possible.
Right. Do you have one memory of a guy that you met for the first time that kind of sticks out over the years?
It's an odd one. It sounds very, very weird. There have been a few of them. But the one that sticks out to me as being like a fanboy is Rick Ankiel.
Okay.
I grew up in St. Louis. We all grew up Cardinals fans in St. Louis. And a lot of guys don't remember because they're too young, but he was like the phenom at that point in time.
Right.
And coming from St. Louis, he was supposed to be the next guy, the next the guy. And so the first time I met him with the team, it was kind of like, whoa, I'm meeting Rick for the first time. This is pretty cool. It ended up, my boys from St. Louis, the guys I grew up with, called me, asked me more than any other player, like, what kind of guy is he? How is he? Is he a cool guy? Is he good? Is he going to pitch again? how is he to be around? But he's probably the one guy that has been very impressive. The other guys have been very fortunate. I've met him in a very non-threatening, very easy type environment. Like Vladimir Guerrero, a great guy to be around. First time I met him, it was very much a handshake and, hey, let me know what you need. And he keeps going and pats me on the back. but it really, I mean, when you sit back and look, we've had some great players here with the Nationals, from Pudge to guys that have been in all-star games, and even on our coaching staff had extremely good players. But we've had a good group of guys.
And I think we're lucky enough to, when we acquire somebody over the last 5 years, it's been a positive move for the player.
Exactly.
And he's come into a good organization, a winning organization, one that has a good reputation for doing things the right way. So I think we've been lucky in that regards.
Exactly. And we do our best to, from all aspects, try to make a guy feel comfortable, whether it be you guys in the PR staff, whether it be us in the clubhouse or the baseball guys. We want them to, if a player's comfortable and feels at home and at ease, he's going to be more productive.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of how we view it.
That works. Now, as everyone probably knows, this isn't a cookie cutter 9-to-5 job. The hours are kind of all over the place. But I want to talk a little bit about, let's talk about tomorrow, for instance. We have a 12:35 start. Generally play 3 hours, get on the bus, head to the airport, and you probably have an itinerary for how tomorrow should go. But how do you, in your role, react and adapt to, we're in the 14th inning, or there's rain coming and that could affect our travel plans, or there's traffic either, whether it's here or in Anaheim when we land. How do you kind of, how do you adapt and how do you prepare for different scenarios?
The biggest thing is just communication. Mm-hmm. I have a network of about 5 or 6 people on a game day that mm-hmm. I have to speak with on a regular basis. That goes from Delta Airlines, our charter group, mm-hmm. to the people with the bus company, to the hotel and the city we're going to. Mm-hmm. You just kind of keep them abreast of what's going on. Sometimes it becomes more and more difficult as mm-hmm. the day goes on, because if you're playing in extra innings, you can't really tell when the game's going to end. You just kind of give them to me, the other part is the hard one is a fast game. Mm-hmm. We have extremely good pitchers. So if a guy gets on a roll, we could have a 2-hour and 20-minute game. Mm-hmm. And that really puts if the plane's not due to get in until right at that time, everything gets real tense real quick. But it's just a matter of communication. Mm-hmm. That's where I think that the technology has changed, where I used to have to kind of guess or mm-hmm. wait for a guy to call me when he lands. But now, like, when they're in the air, my charter coordinator can email me. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're 45 minutes to an hour out. Mm-hmm. I get the email and kind of know what's going on. I can text the bus drivers. Hey, where are you at? What's going on? Tomorrow, my biggest fear is, to be honest, is rush hour traffic.
Right.
Our game's at 12:30. Like you said, it's going to end around 3:30, and we'll probably take off around 4:30, 5 o'clock. Right. And there's not much I can do with rush hour traffic. So that's my biggest fear tomorrow. And at the end of the day, I'm at the bottom of that hill, so everyone's going to be complaining to me about the traffic.
No, I think when we look out the window and see bumper to bumper, it's understood. You can't control traffic, can't control the weather, so –
you got to get thick skin in this job.
Exactly.
Because ultimately, some guys will, my phone will start beeping that, good job with the traffic, Rob. Thanks for getting us out of here on time. And there's really nothing you can do about it. You just got to kind of, as the guys say, you got to wear it at that point in time.
Take a screenshot of the traffic map on Google Maps and just send it around to everybody.
When it's all red, it's not
tell
a good
us to
day.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
So a couple extra things to kind of get us out of here on this. If you had one, I know it's going to be tough because you've been around a while, but one, like, you're probably your favorite memory in your career?
It was probably when it was two things mm-hmm. that really stick out to mm-hmm. me. The first one's early on is when we were in Montreal mm-hmm. and we were playing the Philadelphia Phillies during the first year, and we had a chance to be tied or in first place going into the month of September. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I saw people in that front office running to watch the third out of the game. They were just the excitement in their eyes and the excitement in the office to be in that position in September. They hadn't been there in a long time. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool to be around that.
Yeah.
I was with the Florida Marlins before that, and we'd never been in that position before going into September. We were thinking about draft picks at that point in time. And then the first time we won the division title with Davey, it was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It was pretty surreal. And to see how the players and the fans and ownership mm-hmm. really embraced mm-hmm. and appreciated the efforts of the team and the organization at that point in time was pretty special.
Mm-hmm. So now you've been to every big league park and then some, right?
Except Minnesota. I haven't been to Minnesota new ballpark.
I've heard when people go to Minnesota, that goes to like number 1 on their list.
I've heard it's a great ballpark.
So obviously excluding Minnesota, what is your favorite city to visit other than Washington D.C. obviously?
Good question.
Or Montreal.
Yeah. I do love the big cities. Stuff where you can go out and walk around where you don't per se need a car to get around mm-hmm. town. I like going to New York, Philadelphia, stuff along the East Coast, because like I said, you can get lost in New York for a day.
Right.
And it's pretty cool city, just sitting people watch.
All right.
It's tougher on the Midwest, to be honest. It's just tough. There's not a lot of times the large suburban areas, mm-hmm. and there's not much going on downtown. Like downtown Cincinnati on a Sunday afternoon, there's not much to do down here.
Record a podcast. That's what we do.
Spend time with the quality people. But I do like the larger cities are pretty cool. San Francisco, Seattle is one of my mm-hmm. favorite cities. The larger cities where you can kind of just go and walk, and I say just get kind of lost mm-hmm. in the city.
What about your favorite park to watch a game?
That's another good question. Mm-hmm. I personally like the older ballparks. Mm-hmm. I like going to Wrigley, Fenway, and Dodger Stadium. It's just when you're there, there's a sense that something special happened here in the past. It's a pretty cool environment. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm a little different. I loved Wrigley when they didn't have the TVs inside because it forced you to watch the game.
Right.
people there used to know what was going on, mm-hmm. and they watched the game. It mm-hmm. wasn't about the activities mm-hmm. in between innings or the T-shirt giveaway right. or the other items or the replays. You watched the game. You were into it. You mm-hmm. knew what was going on, and the fans had an appreciation of the game. Mm-hmm. So I do like the older ballparks. The new ones, San Francisco probably right. is one of my favorite yeah. parks.
Now, most important question, the most important part of our day. If it's a 7 o'clock game, about 6:10, we come together and we make one very important decision. That's where to eat. whether it's in press dining or in the concession stands. If you had to pick one concession stand in all of Major League Baseball to eat at, which one is it?
Well, you and I have shared a lot of lunches and dinners together. Yeah. I think even more than my wife, I've been on more dates with Kyle than anyone else. I would
totally
say,
normal.
Yeah, probably my favorite spot to eat is going to be in New York, the steak sandwiches Thanks, yep. in New York. I forget the name of the
La Frida Meats.
Yep, there you go. That is my favorite sandwich. The Mets are gracious enough to give us a complimentary, debit card mm-hmm. almost for their stands to eat for the visiting teams. And I can eat that sandwich almost every day.
And the corn on the cob on the side isn't a bad touch either.
Exactly. The corn on the cob gets a little messy, but the sandwiches are outstanding.
Absolutely.
And the company's okay also.
Yeah, I can't complain. All right, well, I appreciate the time this afternoon. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hope it went well.
It did. Thanks again to Rob McDonald for spending some time with us in what amounted to be a pretty busy and crazy day in his world. So thanks again for his time. Our second interview is with Eddie Longos, the Director of Scouting Operations for the Nationals. Eddie works with Mike Rizzo, Chris Klein, Doug Harris, and Johnny DePuglia on all aspects of the scouting operation. He is heavily involved in the first-year player draft and the July 2nd international signing deadline. So those two events have passed and things calmed down for Eddie a little bit, so we took the time to check in with him, and here is our interview with Eddie Longos. All right, we are here at the Curly W Live studios with Eddie Longos, the Director of Scouting Operations for the Nationals. Eddie is a D.C. native and an alum of the University of Richmond. He's in his seventh season with the Nationals, second in this current role. For more information, you can find his media guide bio on page 382 of the 2017 Washington Nationals media guide. So check that out for more information on Eddie. Thanks for joining us today, Eddie.
Great. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Now, we haven't seen much of Eddie around the office the last month and a half or so because of the draft and the July 2nd signing day. That's occupied most of his time, but now that both of those have passed, we thought it would be a good time to check in and hang out with him for a little bit. So we'll get to your role as it relates to the draft in July 2nd later, but first, I kind of want to talk to you first about your career path, and I guess first, you know, what or who inspired you to maybe pursue this career path in professional baseball?
Yeah, so like Kyle said, I'm a D.C. native. I grew up in a little suburb outside of D.C., I went to high school at St. Albans, right by the National Cathedral downtown, and then played baseball as well at University of Richmond. And while playing at Richmond, I had battled some injuries and kind of realized my career path wasn't going to be drafted, wasn't going to be in the minor leagues. So throughout the summers, I worked out at a place in Tyson's Corner, and a guy I met there named Kevin Reese, who's now the director of pro scouting for the Yankees, was a player at the time with the Yankees, actually, and has some big league time. And he basically worked with me, kind of the mental approach, life after baseball, as he was kind of winding down his career as well. And luck of the draw, I graduated in 09 from Richmond, and he called me a couple months later. I was doing some coaching, a 16-year-old travel ball team in Virginia, and there was an internship with the Nationals, which started down in Vieira, Florida at the time. I took it and worked my way to where I am now.
2009 was a good year for interns, I think. We both started that year, and here we are today. It seems that every young person's goal when they try to get into this industry, sports in general, is and specifically baseball, is to get into baseball operations. It's a tough field. You have to work your way up. You have to know the right people like you did to get your start. But we both employ a lot of interns and a lot of students, and we talk to students a lot. What type of advice do you give younger students or interns about this career and what it all entails and what it takes to get to a position that you're in?
I think you and I know best too, because we've been to the bottom. We start at the bottom where it's a grind. I mean, it's long hours. I know it's managed more nowadays, but there's hours you work after you're paid, And you have to understand that I was lucky and fortunate enough that it was just one internship, and then I got an opportunity where it's hard work and luck of the draw, where you might have to take 2-3 internships. You might have to go into different fields, you know, do some advanced video, do something in the office, maybe work for a minor league affiliate. But it's get your opportunities, make the most of them, meet all the people you can, and make the best of them, because eventually all those people you meet, especially in this game and in any job, that's going to get you to the next level.
Absolutely. That's great advice. And so part of your upbringing, I guess you could say, did you go to scout school?
Yes, I did.
So could you give listeners a little bit of a glimpse into that? I'm sure a lot of have heard about it, and especially people that might be looking at a career in baseball operations or scouting. It's pretty much essential, right?
Yeah, so scout school, I did it my first year. I was fortunate enough to do it right out of the boat. But it's about 2 weeks out in Arizona. It's run by the Major League Baseball Scouting Bureau. And every team sponsors two people to attend. Usually it's people who are employees currently or interns. Sometimes it will be people who aren't with the organization but have some sort of ties. And it's very focused on report writing. So you'll go to, at that time in Arizona, it's the instructional league for those teams. The fall league is just about to start, and there's some local colleges that are having scrimmages. And basically you go out every day, you watch the game, they give you 2 or 3 guys to focus on. You come back, you have a seminar about a certain technique which you're going to write about that day. You do your generic report, meet with your instructor, and then you publish it the next day. So it's fine-tuning those skills on how to write a report more than evaluating. It's putting your stuff on paper.
And what would you say is the age range of people? Is it all college students, fresh out, interns, former players?
It varies. I mean, my time when I was there, I was about 23 years old. I was probably one of the younger ones. But it's nice, like you said, it's a good mix of both interns, full-time employees, and former players. When I was there, Jock Jones actually was in my class, so we always joke about it when I see him down in the field. And also Tom Flash Gordon, former big leaguer for years, was in my class too. So it's a good range. It's a good versatility, and everyone has a good resume. So you really learn from the other people aside from your instructor in the group.
I guess to build on that, what was it like for you sitting next to Jock Jones and Tom Gordon, both guys who played 10 years in the big leagues or more? And you guys are kind of on the same level at this point. You're both learning the industry, learning this side of the business.
I think first when you're first there, you're kind of, you know, starstruck a little bit. You have that great respect for those, especially those two guys who had long and very successful careers. But especially Jock, and, you know, I didn't get to know Flash very well, but Jock was very welcoming from the start. He basically said, hey, we're on the same level now. I'm learning just like you are. We're fresh at this. And we worked, you almost work together with your group, which is nice. But, you know, you looked up to them throughout it. Even if they ask you questions, you kind of go to them first just to see their feel, because they see stuff differently than I see. I mean, I never played professional baseball like those guys, but it was a nice learning tool to have those guys there for sure.
That's awesome. So in your current role, let's get into that a little bit. And like I said, as you can find in his media guide bio, you assist Mike Rizzo, Doug Harris, Chris Klein on all aspects of the scouting operation from here in D.C. So give listeners a brief, you know, rundown of what all that entails, and what do you like most about your role?
Yeah, so Chris Klein and I, we do primarily the amateur side, and that runs the busy season from that is when the season, junior college season starts the last week of January up and through the draft. So it's day-to-day stuff, getting our scouts to the right games, administrative stuff, and basically all the preparation it takes for the draft, working on with Major League Baseball, working with our team doctor, working with our trainers to get medicals through, getting draft IDs so guys can be drafted. It's a grind that our guys go through, but that's my focus those couple months. And it's a nice mix and transition where after that's done and after the draft, I go down to Florida and sign all the guys down there, get to meet all our drafted players, and it transitions quickly into the pro side, which is where I work with Doug Harris. And right away, it's gearing up for the trade deadline, so it's looking at, you know, through our evaluations and our needs with the big league club, who we need, what can help our minor league system in trades, and getting guys to see those players as well. And the same type of stuff with our pro department, where we have 12 scouts, day-to-day needs, what they need. I'm the only person in D.C. in the scouting department, so basically their voice as well in the office to Mike Rizzo, to Bob Miller, to all the guys in the office as well, where they don't get their voice directly at times unless they're coming through for coverage. And then lastly, like Kyle said at the beginning, the July 2nd is all international signings. So I do a little bit, not as much in that department, but that's primarily with Johnny DePuglia. I'll go to the Dominican Republic a couple times a year just to see the guys down there, both during their instructional league and their winter league. So it's a nice mix, and I think that's the great thing about my role, where I get a nice mix of everything. It's not just one department where you never get bored. There's something always going on. It's a mix in all three of those at all times throughout the year.
Are you ever able to get out into the field and scout, either amateur or professional?
Yes. So I go to all the amateur showcases during the summer, the area code games in August, East Coast Pro Showcase in July, the Cape All-Star Game July, the major showcases I'll attend during the summer. I cover for pro coverage. I've covered the Orioles in the past, just have an organization. It's tougher with the draft and whatnot. And then during the spring, I'll see a couple of amateurs. I probably see 15 to 20 players, guys that I know we're going to take in the top three rounds usually. So I get a little bit out there. I'll do some during spring training because there's a plethora of talent down in Florida, so I'll get to see guys during that. But a lot of it is just, you know, day-to-day stuff in the office, which, you know, keeps me in here.
It's a nice office, though. Nice view out of the city of D.C.
Yeah, I get to watch the planes take off.
And the storms come in.
Exactly. And the U-Haul.
Yeah. So back to the draft. We'll just dive into that a little bit. Like I said, it was about a month ago, so things have died down. Guys have signed. I believe we signed 33 of our 40 draft picks. They're reporting to whatever affiliate we send them to, whether it's the GCL or Auburn. So I guess without getting too intricate and give away too many secrets or any at all, what's the final month or so leading up to the draft like for you? Is it intense? Is it fast paced? Is it are you working 24 hours? What's that like last month like?
May is extremely busy. I mean, it's getting guys, you know, the conference tournaments happen, then the College World Series happens. So it's, you know, guys finish their coverage. They come in for their area scout meetings where they go over their pref list of all their players and the guys they really want. So we do that as close as we can to the middle of the month. And then it's full frontal where it's making sure everything's in for the draft. Every medical has been reviewed. Every player has a draft number so they can be drafted. And then the draft hits, and then it's those couple days leading up to it, it's, you know, making that board for the draft, ranking our players, who we really want, talking with Doug Harris, Mark Shalaba, and the player development system, what our needs are. I think this year we did a very good job because we really wanted to focus on pitching and catching, and we got some really good arms this year and a couple good catchers late, and young catching too, which is what we needed. So it's a lot in May. It's a grind, but it's one of those things where you know it's coming every year, no matter what it's like. You know it's going to hit you, and you just got to be prepared for it.
And then moving onto the draft itself, it's 3 days, three long days. What are those 3 days like for you in your role and as a scouting operation as a whole?
So the first day is a lot of, as they say, twiddling your thumbs. We don't pick usually, and you know, we've had a really good team the last couple of years, so we pick later that day. I mean, this year we didn't pick till after 9:30 at night. The draft starts at 7. So it's a lot of waiting that first day. You know you're going to get good players throughout the draft, but that first day you're going to get a guy you really want and like. So that day is kind of slow-paced. After that day is over, the next day, day two, where it's rounds 3 to 10, that's the day where you kind of make your bread and butter, where you work within your pool with the dollars you have and your needs, and especially, you know, who you take those first couple picks to manage it so that you can sign all these players within your pool amount. So day two, that night leading up to day two, is extremely busy. And then day three, which is the rest of the draft, it's a lot of filling for your minor league system, guys that didn't go in the top 10 that are not now signable. And that day is rapid fire. So you're picking very quickly, and you have to be on the phone. Everyone's got to be on the phone with the scouts. It's who the scouts want, who the scouts know will sign, if kids have changed their minds. So there's a lot going into that. And I would say the 3 days of the draft are really the only time I'm really a little on edge, because it's the draft ID system, which I'm not going to get into, but you need a draft ID to pick a guy. You know, luckily, I've been fortunate where I've never had the issue where a number's not in, but I'm always paranoid where when you look up that number to draft, it's not there, which is probably the worst feeling in the world if everyone's ever had it. But that's probably the most nerve-wracking. But yeah, day two and day three are probably the most intense. Day one's kind of just getting the feel, you know, everyone's excited. I mean, it's obviously broadcast, but day two and three is really where it's at.
Well, if you're on edge, you don't show it, because as long as I've been in there with you, you've been cool as a cucumber and listening or answering my questions about who we might take so we can write a press release as fast as possible. And so, like I said, you're cool as a cucumber in there.
I try.
So not now, easy. Now that it's over and we're about a month past, and you talked about this a little bit, but Are your amateur guys, are they on to the 2018 draft? Are they switching over to pro coverage for the postseason? What's kind of their July, August, September like?
Yeah, so they always say the day after the draft ends is when 2018 starts. Mm-hmm. So these guys, right away, there's a showcase. Perfect Game runs a lot of showcases throughout the summer. There's one down in Fort Myers, which is immediately after the draft. So a lot of guys will go to that. But majority they'll go. Some will do some Cape coverage. It's more regional coverage, where the guys in the Midwest West will go to the area code games in August, where the elite players will be at. The guys on the East Coast will go to East Coast Pro Showcase in Tampa. And there'll be local stuff for, tryout camps and whatnot. Our guys also do pro coverage, so we cover all the rookie leagues with all our area scouts, so they'll have that as well to do. And then I have the guys cover every college summer league and every college summer league all-star game. So they get around a lot, and then as soon as September hits in October, all the major colleges have scout days, which they invite all the scouts to come, they inter-squad. So it's not as intense as the regular season, but they still have day-to-day stuff they got to get rolling for their fall list, which is basically their preliminary list for the following year, which is due December 1st.
Okay, so I guess the goal we always talk about every year, and we kind of talk about in the office, is you draft big leaguers. That's the goal. We have 40 picks. You want to draft 40 big leaguers. And at the top, first, second round, you're going to get hopefully an impact player, but the Nationals have a lot of success recently in the later rounds, and going back to a guy like Michael A. Taylor, who was in the sixth back when he was selected. Billy Burns, who they traded to Oakland a couple years ago, was a 30th round pick. Coda Glover, eighth round. How much pride do you guys take in obviously selecting someone strong at the top of the draft, but when you draft and develop major league talent in the later rounds, how much pride do you as a staff take in that?
I mean, it's great, and that's all on the area scout too. It's these guys that go to the homes, really meet the kid, get to know them, have a great history with them. I mean, Coda Glover, for example, Ed Gufson, who's our area scout there in the Midwest and North Texas, he had seen him since high school through the junior college he was at, and then at Oklahoma State as well. I mean, he had really built a history with these guys. And same with Billy Burns. Billy Burns lived down the street from Roy Clark, and Roy had seen him as a kid and really got to know him and knew this kid was special. So I take a lot of pride in it. I know Chris Klein does. I know Mike Rizzo does. But it's all in the area scout with those guys. I mean, you look at some of the guys we took this year, the younger guys, where I'm eager to see them because, a lot of guys are at small junior colleges or small high schools, mm-hmm. and they take a risk. I mean, it's not exorbitant amounts of money, but they're taking a risk, and it's their name by them. So they know what they have to do and how they have to compete.
Other guys like Robbie Ray, Nathan Carnes were out of the top. I think Ray was 11th, and then Nathan Carnes was 13th, I think. And yeah. Robbie Ray is a Cy Young candidate this year.
And both those are great examples too, Kai. I mean, mm-hmm. Robbie Ray, the scout, literally knew the family personally since he was a kid. And Nathan Carnes, I mean, like, again, our scout actually who signed him was his coach at Texas Tech. So it's a nice mix where they build this history and they really get to know the kids. And that's one of the most important things is, yeah, they can perform on the field, but knowing the kids' makeup, their mental capacity, and, their family setting makes a lot of difference too in how they perform and how they make it through the minor league system and ultimately to the big leagues.
I think we've got one developing this year from last year's draft, Daniel Johnson, who's absolutely – I think he's up to like 16 or 17 home runs this season. That's another example. I think he was, a fifth or sixth round pick yep. last year. It's like I said, there's 40 rounds of the draft, and obviously you're going to get talent in the top, at the way top, but systems are built through the depth and through the draft, and when you can hit on big leaguers in the 30th round, I think you're doing something right. My last topic I want to talk to you about is scouting is full of terms and lingo to describe players.
Absolutely.
For the casual fan, they might not know what the heck a scout is saying when they describe a player, but what I hope you can do for fans that are listening is let's throw out some of those terms so they can help impress their friends when they're sitting at Nats Park or they're sitting at a high school or college game, and they can impress their friends by talking about how good this pitcher is or how good this hitter is.
I think the first key things where you can impress, where everyone thinks they know but they really probably don't, is know the five tools. So know that there's the hit tool, the power tool, the run, the field, and the arm. So know those right away. So say, if you say a guy's a five-tool player, well, he's got all five of those. I mean, Bryce Harper, five-tool player, pretty obvious, right? So that's just kind of the basic. Where you can really get guys going is know the scouting scale. So it's a 20 to 80 scale. It's not 0 to 100. Scouting, no matter where you go, it's 20 to 80, 2 to 8. Some teams do it that way. But an 80 is an everyday, basically a Hall of Famer. I mean, you're not going to throw that lightly. So if you say a guy's an 80, I mean, that means he's really special. Most guys what we write up are, you know, the 55, 60s, and that's an everyday all-star. So that's a good player. And then compare guys. So say, you know, hey, this guy catches like Yachty. And a guy might look at you and say, well, Yachty Molina is pretty good. Yeah, exactly. And you can say, well, he can field, he can throw. You can bring the tools back into that. But I like to break it down more towards, you know, the roll grades, where you can throw out words all the time. But, you know, 80 fastball, that's a guy that no matter is basically unhittable. Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, 80 fastballs. I mean, talk about those grades, and that's what really defines the player. The guys that are, you know, throwers, power arm, that's a good way to say it. You know, nasty break, nasty 12 to 6 on a breaking ball. His changeup really drops out of the zone. I mean, little phrases like that can get you going. Or, you know, that's just the pure power bat. I mean, even those small words define a lot about a player.
And they transcend anybody in the industry. If you say someone's nasty, that everyone pretty much knows what
Absolutely.
That means. It's not gonna you're not gonna catch anyone off guard. But hey, man, thanks for joining us today. That's all I really got for you this afternoon. I know you're a busy man right now. We're getting started in this first 10-day road trip of the second half. So I know we've all got stuff to do. So I appreciate you spending some time with us this afternoon.
Absolutely, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Rob and Eddie for joining us on the fifth episode of the Curly W Live podcast. Like we always say, we want your feedback, so feel free to tweet at me, at Kyle Brostowitz, or at Nationals, or feel free to leave comments on Curly W Live. If there's anything you want to see or hear about, or if you have any good ideas for the next episode, feel free to tweet at us or leave comments. As I said, you can always find the podcast on our blog, Curly W Live, which is curlyw.mlblogs.com, nationals.com/podcast, and iTunes. Be sure to subscribe to the blog as well as the podcast on iTunes so you don't miss out on anything. And as we said in the open, the Nationals return home to Nationals Park on Tuesday, July 25th for a homestand with the Milwaukee Brewers and the Colorado Rockies. Some of the cool promotions the Nationals have set up for this homestand, Tuesday, July 25th is U.S. Marine Corps Day. On Wednesday, July 26th, the Nationals will be giving out Nationals Fedora to the first 25,000 fans presented by Delta Airlines. Saturday and Sunday are the food drives presented by Harris Teeter, both Saturday for the 7:05 game and Sunday for the 1:35 game. So once again, be sure to check out Nationals Park next week as the team returns home from this 9-game road trip. And until next time, fans, thanks for checking out the podcast.